I live in North Carolina, and in 1973, I believe it was about 11:30 at night, I was in Evanston, Illinois, which is a northern suburb of Chicago. I was at Northwestern University. I was 17 years old. I was with my boyfriend. We were sitting in a car and talking, and we were right in front of the observatory. At that time, the observatory had no buildings around it. It was just some bushes and a street and a huge parking lot. We were in the parking lot, I would say about 350 feet from the observatory, maybe 400 feet, not very far, not a block away, not that far. But sitting in the car, and we were facing the observatory, and my boyfriend was talking, and I was looking straight ahead, and I see this really bright star, and it's really low in the sky. And all of a sudden, this star started looking brighter and brighter, and then I realized it wasn't a star. And it was coming right at us, and by this time, within seconds, the star became so bright that my boyfriend looked up, because you could just see this bright light coming at you, and we're both looking, and this bright light turns into a spaceship, an aircraft of some sort, and it's coming very quickly, and within a half a second, we realized it was a UFO, it was a flying saucer, and it was big. It was bigger than the observatory. I can't say how big it was. Probably, I estimated it would be at least 9 or 10 car lengths long, and about 25-30 feet high, something like that. It was very large, and it completely covered the building. And as it approached, it came right up over the observatory and came to complete stop. Nothing underneath, just air, complete stop. And it wasn't what I would call hovering, where the aircraft kind of moves and tilts a little, like there's engines keeping it up, like a helicopter would. This was completely stopped in midair. The shape of the craft was, I guess, pretty much like what you would imagine a flying saucer would look like. It was a round disc shape. It had kind of a dome at the top. And then underneath there was like kind of like a small area in a skull or something, and there were lights inside this, and they were flashing. I don't know if the lights were spinning or flashing, but I know they were going on and off, and the lights were white, all white. And it hovered over us, or over the observatory, I mean, for about 5 or 6 minutes. And initially when I saw it, we were first just shocked, and I knew this was nothing else but a UFO, a flying saucer. This was nothing I had ever seen. We're talking 1973. There weren't those many sightings that I even ever heard of, but I certainly knew what I was looking at when I was looking at it. And I wanted to get out of the car and get a closer look. And my boyfriend was terrified. And he said, he grabbed my arm like the hardest I've ever had anybody grab me. And he said, "You're not going anywhere. And don't move. They can see you." And we were in the dark. The observatory had, I think, 2 or 3 lights around the observatory. And so it was, that was lit up, but we were not lit up. We were in the dark area. And so I didn't think they could see us, but he did. And I just kept saying, "Let me just go out. Just let me get closer. I just want to, like, get under it and look at it." And he said, "No, they can come out and take you." And I thought, that's just crazy, because at that time, I'd never heard of an alien abduction. And I had absolutely no fear. I was a stupid 17-year-old. But anyway, so he kept me in the car. And then all of a sudden, about 6 minutes later, it it lifted up just ever so slightly and zoomed away, like going from 0 to 1,000 miles an hour. It didn't like speed up like a car would. It just went, shot right through the sky, and within 3 seconds it was absolutely gone. And that's the end of my story. You want me to tell the next story? I can start that.
Sure.
Okay, this was, let's see, I was 8 years old. I'm born in 1955. So this was 1963, I'd say. And I had, there were 5 kids in my family. And my mom, we were out on the front lawn of our house. It was, I think, either August or September. We weren't back at school yet. And in those days, on a hot night, people didn't have air conditioning. Everybody went outside and sat in lawn chairs. And so my neighbors, the Diamonds, were out there, and I think the Weisses were out there. And I lived in Skokie, Illinois. And so I think it was, I want to say it wasn't our bedtime, so it had to be between, I think it was between like 6:30 and 8:30 at night. And we're all playing outside. And all of a sudden, we see this thing very slowly going through the sky, and it's a UFO. And people, like, just stood up and were staring into the sky, and I would say it was about, if I would put it into, it's really hard for me to estimate how high up it is. I would say it was like 7 blocks up into the sky, and very clear. It was a very clear night, and it was this craft. It was easy to see because it was all lit up inside, and it was just like a dome on the top, and then the dome covered part of the window. The top was the dome, and then it was just like the dome overhung over the windows, and the windows were completely surrounding the saucer. At least it was on the half that I saw. And the windows were probably, I'd say, like 10 feet tall. And then the bottom was like the top. It was like a saucer shape. And there were lights underneath. I think the lights were white. I don't remember them being colored. But anyway, and it hovered in the same spot for 2 hours. Or maybe it wasn't that long. Maybe it was an hour and a half. It was a long time. It was a long enough time that lots of neighbors were looking. And it was lit up inside, and you could see there was like sections of windows. And you could see people in there. It looked like people. Of course, it was high up, but they were sitting down, and you could see them. And I probably saw 4 or 5 people. They were all like in a station, and I saw like maybe 5 or 6 windows were what we could see from our point of view, and they all had people like sitting, looking out the windows, like they were observing us, or they were at a desk doing something and looking out the window. I don't know if I'm giving a very good picture of this, but anyway, so when we first saw it, we were just like astounded, and nobody was doing anything. And then when it didn't go away, my mom started. She went over and talked to the neighbor, Helen Diamond, and said, "You know, what do you think we should do? What is this?" And finally, one of my neighbors or somebody said, "Call the news station." And so at that time, the person that my mom called in. Of course, we lived in a suburb of Chicago, and so she called, and they put her in touch with Walter Cronkite. And I remember her getting off the, coming outside and saying, "I just talked to Walter Cronkite." And so she had told him what she saw, and he said it was a weather device from the government. And so my mom's like, "Oh, it's okay." He said it's a weather device from the government. And I was like, I am not believing that that is from the government. And I was just a little kid, but that was too weird of a spaceship to me. You know, to me that looked like a UFO. So, anyway, then after the neighbors were all talking, and it pretty much stayed in the same area. It might have, like, been moving just a little bit, but I was sitting in the chair, standing in the yard or whatever, and I just saw it right there in front of me. It just hardly moved at all. So after, let's say, an hour and a half, it just, as if, like, it was getting engines fired up or something, but there was a change that was going on, and it's not really, you know, it's hard to remember because I was 8 years old and I'm 58 right now. So there was something that we knew was changing. Maybe the lights changed, or we could hear his engine sound. I don't know, but we just knew something was going to happen, and all of a sudden it took off very quickly, not like supersonic speed like the first incident, but very quickly. And then it was gone. And probably it was witnessed by at least a dozen people in my neighborhood. And let's see what else. Anything else? Oh, the color of that also was very dark, but I don't remember exactly what color it was. But the first instance, that one, was a grayish silver. They were both pretty much the same color, but the second one, it was much darker outside. The first instance, the observatory was lit up, so I could see the color of the saucer, so that was easier to remember or see what color it was. But the second one, it was darker out, so I think it was just kind of a dark gray. And that's it. Okay, this is not something I saw, but my girlfriend, Mary Cattell, she was had been at a party with a friend, and they were driving home. It was 2 a.m., and she was at the corner of Main Street and Crawford at a stoplight when a UFO hovered over the intersection, and she said there were six cars that were stopped at the intersection, and people were just getting out of their car and looking at this UFO that was right up overhead. And this happened in Skokie, Illinois, which is right next to Northwestern University. And actually, I lived on Main Street, so when that happened, when I saw that UFO in 1963, and this happened to her when she was 18, so she, this would have happened, let's see, she was born in 57. So, and she was probably about 20. Anyway, she said that the UFO was there for several minutes, and these six cars saw it late at night, and just people were getting out of their cars and just stopping and staring at it because it wasn't moving. And she said it was directly overhead, and she said it was, she just called it a flying saucer. She didn't describe it to me, but she said it was a large flying saucer, and that's all. Okay, I'll start from the beginning. The brother, his name is Bill Gretzmacher, and he used to work on supercomputers maybe 25 years ago when supercomputers were the size of a building or this very huge computers. Anyway, he worked in Arizona, and he worked for a really big company. I don't know the name of it, but anyway, he told me that somebody found out about how he knew how to work on a particular kind of supercomputer, and someone from the government contacted either his boss or him, I'm not sure which, but they asked him to go and work on a computer in Area 51. So he agreed to do it. So they took him to, I don't know how he got to the airport or whatever, I don't know that part, but he said they came in a military vehicle and picked him up and said that they were, you know, taking him directly to Area 51 and, you know, did he have lunch, go to the bathroom, all that stuff. And so he got in the car, and he said they just drove and drove and drove and drove and drove. They drove for several hours. And was thinking that they were going to get there in 20 minutes, that it wasn't that far, but he said that he felt like the directions that they were going in could have been driving in circles, but it was, he thought, being done so that he could not give his location, just kind of driving around and around so he would be thrown off to where they were going. So anyway, then he got into Area 51, the truck or whatever stopped, and he was told, and by the way, they blindfolded him. I've got to tell you that. They blindfolded him, and he was taken out of the truck, and they said that they were going to hold on to him and walk with him. But he was, he said his blindfold was absolutely black. There's no way he could see even a speck of light through it. And they took him to a building, and he could hear them walking him in and closing the doors. And they said, they took the blindfold off, and they said, you can open your eyes now, and that he was in the super huge room with the supercomputer and no windows, one door, and not one, but two guards at the door. So he could not go out, you know, open the door and look at anything else. And so he worked on the computer, and then they blindfolded him again and did the exact same thing. And so he never got to see anything at all from that area. But he said he was, like, really amazed at the high security that they had, that he wasn't able to see anything. And that was all.
Wow.
My former husband, I won't say his name, worked for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and he was told that he needed to go work on a computer. We lived in Wilmington, North Carolina, and he did lots of different kinds of engineering, building bridges and dams and all kinds of things. So anyway, the Corps of Engineers said that he needed to go and do some work on a particular computer. And he was like, well, you know, can't I just, you know, do the work from Wilmington and transfer it? And they said, no, it can only be put on this computer. So I asked, at the time we didn't have children, and I said, can I go with you? I want to say it was in Virginia. I wasn't really paying much attention, but I'm pretty sure it was in Virginia. Well, anyway, they gave him a set of directions how to get there. And his boss said, I was told that you must follow these directions to a T or you will not find the place. And so I thought, well, it must be a pretty dinky little place, right? So anyway, we drive, and we're at the last step, and it says drive 500 feet and turn left. So we drive 500 feet, and there's no street. So we drive, keep going and keep going, and then after 3 miles, we're like, there's no street. This is out in the middle of nowhere, cornfields or whatever. I don't know. Empty fields. And so we came back this like 3 times. So fine. I said, okay, just go from the left and we'll go exactly 500 feet. We're going to, you know, measure it. So when we got up there, there was a little tiny dirt road. And there were bushes and everything and trees. You could hardly even see the road was there. And I said, look, there's a road. And he said, that can't be it. And I was like, there's no other place. We've been driving back and forth. Just go down the road and let's see where it takes us. So sure enough, it was a road. And we're going down this forest. We're in this forest. And now you can only get one car down this road. This is a little tiny dirt road. And it was obvious that somebody had cut out all the trees so you could, you know, a very clear road. But to the left and right, you could just stick your arm out and you could almost touch a tree or a bush. It was that narrow of a road. So anyway, Paul and I are driving and driving, and I'm like, okay, I must have screwed up because we didn't see anything. We were just getting deeper and deeper into a forest. And he's like, this is somebody's private road. You got me going down, and how can I turn around? There's nowhere to turn around. And he's getting upset with me. And so we're driving now probably, I'd say, a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles. We were driving a long time into this forest. Well, all of a sudden, the forest opens up. No more forest, and there's a huge compound in front of us. And there's about 50 to 100 foot actual cement road, and there's, right in front of us to the left, there's a guard house. And finally he's like, wow, this must be the military. This must be a military base. We didn't know what it was. He didn't know what he was going into. You know, he just thought maybe it was just like the Corps of Engineers office building in downtown Wilmington. We didn't know. So anyway, in front of, behind the guardhouse, there's a very tall wall. I'd say maybe 16 feet. And these, when we approached, these, as soon as the guards saw our car, they just came right out of the guardhouse, and they're all dressed in military uniforms, and they're holding really big guns. Not holding handguns, they're holding, I don't know what they are, but they're really big guns. And we come up, and they're like yelling at us, and Paul rolls down the window, and he goes, and the guard says, who are you? And he says who he is, and he shows him his paperwork, and the guy's like really mad, and he says, who is she? And he said, oh, it's my wife. And he said, what is she doing here? And he said, well, nobody said I could bring her. And so he said to me, put your head down. So I put my head down, and he told Paul to put his head down. And so he said, don't put your head up until I tell you. And so he goes and takes the paperwork and goes somewhere. I don't know where he goes, but I didn't hear him right around me because my head was down. So he's talking to the other guy, and I could hear them talking, and then he comes back, and he says to me, now I want you to slide over to the driver's side. And he says, Mr. Mason, I want you to get out of the car and put your head down. And so I'm freaking out. I'm thinking, you know, what, you know, I've done something wrong. What are they going to do to me? So anyway, I had to climb over the console and get into the seat. And he says, now I want you to keep your head down. I do not want you to look forward. I want you to keep your head down. And I want to back up this car. And I want you to drive out of here. And I do not want you to look straight ahead. And he said it in like a really loud, angry voice. And I'm thinking, how can I back up the car and not look forward, you know? But he just said, keep your head down, do not forward. So I did the best, that, you know, that I could. Oh, and he said, come back in 3 hours. And you be at the outside entrance, your husband there, in exactly 3 hours. So I backed up the car, and he didn't even let me talk to my husband or anything. He just said, you get out right now. So I backed out the car, and I went down the road, and 3 hours later, I met my husband. But the interesting thing, and then my husband told me, you know, that they blindfolded him and took him into, took him inside the gates, I guess, and took him into a room, and he worked on his computer and did what he had to do, and then they took him out, and so he never saw anything, but I did. Because when Paul, when they were coming out and Paul was showing, looking at the paperwork, I looked inside. There were, the compound was just huge, huge compound. There were satellite dishes much, much bigger than houses. And there had to be, I'm guessing, 100 of them, because I saw dozens of them. And they were just humongous. Now, this was, I was 24. So this was about 1980. And nothing, and maybe there were back then, but anyway, there were just the biggest satellite dishes I've ever seen. And I think the whole place was filled with them. And I don't know, and my husband didn't know what this place was for at all. You know, he wasn't, you know, it wasn't told what kind of facility or anything like that. But anyway, so that's that story.